Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
It's the Week 6 podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Andrew Mason with Andy Lindahl. And the last time we sat in this room, the Broncos were undefeated. 2 games in 5 days. That undefeated start seems like ages ago after the last 2 games against Atlanta and San Diego, both setbacks, both following very similar templates except with different quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing 5 days for Bronco fans. There's no doubt about that. Now, again, I still attest it's not panic mode time, but I think you're seeing this isn't going to be as easy as it felt like it might, as you said, after the first half of the season. And defensively, I know there's some concerns there. You know, look, at the end of the day, the only thing that concerns me, not the only thing, but the main thing that concerns me after what we saw the last 2 days, just focusing on the defense last 2 games, is there was not that energy. There was not that joy to play together. There was not that fun atmosphere and that fervor to rush the passer. Now, some of the situations San Diego found itself in, they weren't letting them rush the passer. But, you know, look, you're going to have matchup problems expose you from time to time. That's why the other guys' coaches get paid, too. Mm-hmm. Atlanta did that. I still would say Atlanta doesn't have – or every team in the NFL doesn't have the personnel Atlanta did to do what they did to execute that game plan. I'm more concerned, Andrew, about how there just wasn't a lot of energy. And I guess – I don't know how you felt about it. For me on the sidelines Sunday in particular, last night I can understand as we record on a Friday. The San Diego game I can understand a little bit because it's the hard turnaround and the traveling team always has it tough. Sunday against Atlanta at home felt to me like we just arrived back from Tampa the Friday before and everybody was jet-lagged. And I still can't figure it out.
Yep. Slow and jet lag, I mean, it's a good way of putting it because – it seems like the alarm clock isn't going off, and they've fallen behind 10-0 in both of the last 2 games. They're, you know, they have the league's worst point differential in the first quarter for the entire season. Now they've given up 41 points in the first quarter. The offense isn't responding. It's having quick drives and going out. The defense is going right back onto the field, and that, I think, is contributing to the lack of energy, but I'll say I thought the crowd could have been a bit louder Sunday. I mean, I think it was kind of, you know, team feeds the crowd feeds the team, et cetera. And then in San Diego, I thought it was sort of the same thing because at least half the crowd was Broncos fans, and they were awfully, awfully quiet most of the game, falling behind 10-0, and then the offense struggling to get back into it. I mean, they don't even mount a substantial scoring drive until the fourth quarter. I mean, the field goal drive in the second quarter, of course, was a 3-and-out after the muff punt. You know, you want the crowd to energize the team, but the team also has to energize the crowd, and that really hasn't happened the last 2 games.
It's interesting that you would say that. As you know, I do an afternoon show with Ed McCaffrey and Romy being on Denver Sports 760, and Romy being a cheerleader for the squad, she noticed that. She brought it up. Now, I was more focused on the team, I guess, because I'm watching the sidelines closer. And I've got the headset in listening to our radio broadcast. But Romy had said she felt like you did, that the crowd brought it at the beginning and then died out. They petered out by the second quarter. And she couldn't understand it either. And if you're a Denver crowd, I get it. You want to see some good football. You want to feed off the team for sure. But as you and I have talked about, when it comes to these home games, you need it again against Houston. And I think it'll probably be easy to manufacture it because Brock Osweiler's in the house. But
yeah, that was actually the loud. It seemed like for a while there, the loudest the crowd got in the Atlanta game was when his image flashed on the scoreboard and everyone booed.
Right, because he had a rough day that day as well. But the crowd, look, you need to take pride in showing up and being loud again. Seattle, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, they all take pride in being loud no matter how the game's going.
Yeah.
Denver fans have to get back to that like they were in the 80s.
It smells of a Super Bowl hangover from for the fans almost.
Well, it does.
Or content, maybe just a little bit. Maybe there's a little bit of contentment.
Look, I'll
after
use the
winning
word.
It all.
People get mad at me when I say this, but I'm not afraid to say it. Denver fans are a bit spoiled. Mm-hmm. We went from like the Red Sox. We were the Red Sox before the Red Sox, if you will.
Yes.
Couldn't win one.
But kept coming close.
Denver.
But yep. Kept coming close.
Always there. Record number of losses. And then all of a sudden you get some, and now, like, look, when you're booing the offense halfway through that game, when there's a rookie quarterback in there, you're a little spoiled. Because it was still, again, if the game is still in reach, I don't think you should be pitching in the towel. You want to boo them when they're down 30 to nothing and nothing's happened. I get that.
Yeah, Kansas City last year, you're behind 29-0.
Right.
I understand that.
That was ugly. Yeah. You deserve to let it go there and let some frustration out. But if you still have a game in your hand, then I don't know why you're booing anybody ever, if you call yourself a true fan.
Yeah. But, again, like I said, it's symbiotic when it's working. It's the opposite when it's not. And, you know, you hope that there's that spark to get people energized. And every time there was a moment, I'll lump Thursday's game into that because there were so many Bronco fans in San Diego. Every moment you thought, okay, here's an opening, whether it's the muff punt and you have the replay reversal, gets the ball, the Broncos the ball in the red zone, or when C.J. Anderson had that run late in the third quarter, and of all the penalties,
killer.
And we will get to the penalties in a bit, the only one I really question the call on was Matt Paradis on the hold on C.J.'s run. That was the only one where I thought, that probably isn't a penalty. And I was talking with our friend Jeff Legwald, and we both said, hey, you know, it's a surprise when Matt Paradis does anything wrong technically like that, and that's why it looked odd on the surface, and then you went back and watched replay, like, yeah, that wasn't a hold. But there were penalties that really short-circuited the offense at the worst possible times. Go back to the end of the first half, and you're down 10-3, and you get the ball, and there's time on the clock. And, yes, you have bad field position. But C.J. Anderson gets upfield for 20 yards, and at that point you figure, okay, going to maybe get a drive here, get some momentum going to the halftime break, and you have the holding penalty. It brings it back, and at that point, being so deep in your own territory, the strategy became, let's just get enough of this clock wound down to get to halftime. And that they didn't do that until the third down when I think it was Devontae Booker just took a little bit of time to kind of get going, and that wound down the clock. But every time there was a moment where you thought things were going their way, the Broncos committed a penalty, and that's not going to help the energy and the fans either.
You know what? And I agree with you about the penalties. I hate holding calls. They're just so subjective sometimes to me. You can call them on every play.
You definitely can call them on every play with this defense, I would say.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing.
I'm not a complaint about the officials person. You know, it's something you have to deal with. When you have elite defensive players, they're going to get held. Von Miller is going to get held. Accept that.
But
you'd like to see it called from time to time.
If you're not calling it, you're not calling it. But when the Broncos have 8 or 9 penalties and the Chargers have none, and you've called, and to you pointed, that play you talked about with CJ, that was a run play. Mm-hmm. You know you're taking a risk on pass plays. That's where the holding calls show up. But on a run play, that's ridiculous. It is what it is. I would say this. It's not just the penalties. The Broncos, this is why I keep telling people, don't panic yet. Mm-hmm. There are plays to be made. For whatever reason, they haven't made them. Go back to the Atlanta game. 2 drop potential interceptions that are the typical, that's the trademark play of this defense that turns games around for this team, right? Both Aqib Talib and Chris Harris each dropped opportunities.
And that is something that has been missing. While you had 2 takeaways Thursday, they were both by special teams, have not had a defensive takeaway in the last 2 games, and it's probably not a coincidence the Broncos lost both of them. The takeaways from that defense are essential to this team's equation for success.
Well, so you missed that. And the other problems that I saw, you know, with young Paxton, and this is why, and see, this I think bled into the Thursday night game. On Sunday, Paxton showed you a lot to be excited about, not ready to run the offense. He was off time. He missed throws. There were plays, again, to be made. There were guys open. There were throws he was trying to make. He either was too long or too wide. In Manuel's case, just too high because of bad footwork, and just was missing the timing of the offense, which led to the defense being on the field the whole time. So that's why he lost a game. And then I think it reverberates around to San Diego, where you get Trevor back. And I don't know how you felt last night. The San Diego game, I felt like Trevor was told, and maybe some of it was just automatic self-preservation in human nature, but it was, we're not holding the ball long. You're not getting close to me. I'm not taking a bunch of hits. And that led to not having a lot of time to develop a lot of different plays because everything had to happen really quickly.
And that meant everything had to happen underneath, which certainly the fact that Broncos were emphasizing the underneath game, it was curious, given the fact that Brandon Flowers was out with a concussion, Jason Verrett's out for the season with a partial tear of the ACL, and there weren't many opportunities to get downfield. Now, like Jody Kamel spoke a little bit about this on Friday morning, you know, that he felt that if the ball had gone downfield the way that the Chargers were using, I think basically the way they're using their safeties, setting up for some potential interceptions, but there was no vertical threat for most of the game. And this offense, you need to get the running game going, but you also need the vertical threat for it to work. I mean, you go back to the Chargers game, or not the Chargers game. It tells you how tired I am. I'm on like 4 hours of sleep here. To the Bengals game and the Bucks game. Bengals game, you had the two deep shots for touchdowns. Bucks game, you had some opportunities to stretch the defense downfield, and they did that. Of course, the Bucks game, by stretching it downfield, you exposed Trevor Siemian to the pass rush that got him hurt in the first place. So it goes back to what you were saying.
Yeah, it's to your point, there was a deep shot that could have been hit last night.
Yeah.
And Trevor was gutting it out. Anybody that doesn't think that kid wasn't playing through some pain, then you just aren't paying attention to football. He tried to hit Emmanuel down the Broncos sideline. He was about 2-3 yards, I guess, too deep on the pass. Mm-hmm. But Emmanuel was there. There was a window to fit it in. But to your point, not a lot of those materialized. You know, you have the Demaryius Thomas fumble.
Two fumbles by wide receivers.
Which you can't have. You really can't have. And Jordan Taylor, I love Jordan Taylor. You got a little cute there.
The effort was there. You don't question the effort. You do question.
But tuck it away.
You do question going backward,
yep,
to try to go forward, and you do question the fact the ball's out there like a loaf of bread. I mean, that's a fundamental thing that you learn in Pee Wee.
And Demaryius, for all the good that Demaryius had done, and he was fighting for yards and trying to pick up a first down, he's got to secure it away more too. But you know what? Demaryius is always going to take big shots like that. Because guys have to come in, they got to bring the heat to get him down.
You can't bring him down with an arm tackle.
Right. Yeah. So, look, you're frustrated by all that. The bottom line, it goes back to what you talked about. This offense right now has to solve some fundamental problems. The defense can't be giving up long drives to start games. You got to quit with the 15-play, 6-7-minute drives to start games. But to be quite honest with you, the offense has got to get going sooner. You got to answer every now and again, just every now and again.
And you've got to answer, and you've got to actually establish something at the start. I mean, the defense has given up scores on 5 of 6 first possessions in games, 4 of them touchdowns. The offense has only one first possession touchdown this year, and that was on an 11-yard drive that was set up by the Aqib Talib interception to open the game on the third play at Tampa Bay. So that's really no sustained, finished offensive drives to start a game, and that's... You can't do that, especially when you're an offense that maybe isn't built to have a comeback from 20 down. It's built to get a lead and play with that lead. It's built for balance, to use the run and then use the play action to play off of the run. It's built to keep for balance and to keep a defense off balance. And in the last two games, when you're falling behind 10-0, you don't have that early response. It's not going to be able to do that.
Well, for whatever reason, it's a combination of everything. I do believe that. But the offensive line play is where it's got to start. Those guys, I think, will have to challenge themselves next game to just try to have a better game than they did the last two. And Trevor...
Rough game for Donald Stevens coming back, too.
Yeah, but you know what was funny is that people said there'd be rust. There could be rust. It was a three-week... He was off for 3 weeks.
And he's only basically... And he missed most of week two.
Yeah.
So basically, he's had... One game with, as a part of that O-line quintet, he's still learning what everyone else is doing. Even though he's got knowledge in the zone blocking scheme from his time in Kansas City, he knows what he's doing technically himself, but as far as being on the same page with everybody else, it's just not quite there because he doesn't yet have the reps.
You know what else I want to see, too? And I love this guy. He had a superhuman effort to get the touchdown that called back. I love C.J. Anderson. Mm-hmm. The only thing about last night that struck me was Devontae Booker got out there on a couple 3-4 runs in a row.
He ran
angry.
He was running hard.
For whatever reason, that lit CJ's pilot light. Now I realize his team fights, they feed off each other and whatever. What I love about CJ is if he feels like you're trying to out-duel him, he comes back in and takes it personally, then he runs harder.
Yeah, the touchdown that got called back reminded me of the Colts playoff loss on that 4th and 1. Just refusing. It's like sometimes in his mind he said he's like, I'm not going down on this play, no matter what you do. I'm not going down.
He needs to self-start that though. Because honestly, is it fair to characterize it that didn't show up until the Devontae stuff in the middle of that third quarter?
Yeah,
it didn't
show up
from the beginning.
Didn't. Granted, there weren't many holes.
Right, and that's the thing. It all has to work together. I'm not singling out CJ as a source of a big problem.
And there were more gaps open underneath once she got behind 19-3 and 21-3.
There were, but I'm just saying there was an anger in CJ's running at the end that I didn't see at the beginning.
And anger on the whole team in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, they say pace yourself. You can't pace yourself against anybody in this league. And if there's maybe it's a good thing to learn the lesson that you can't dawdle against anybody. I mean, yeah, the Chargers were struggling. They're 1-4, but you could look at all of their deeper statistical indicators and see that this wasn't a team that was bad. I mean, for crying out loud, they were second in the league in points scored coming into this game.
By percentages, they should have been 4-1.
Yes.
It's amazing that they're 1-4. Like somebody put it the best way, you've got a better chance of getting hit by an asteroid than they were of being 4-1 and being 1-4. Mm-hmm. Yet there they were at 1-4. Even with all the injuries. So, and you know what? You face them again in a couple weeks. Now Jeb Putzier pointed this out a while back. It is a little bit of the you can't cry about unfair in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They don't care. It is a little bit disheartening, disappointing maybe is the right word, that you have to face the Chargers twice, divisional games, on short weeks. Because even though now the Broncos get this nice long break to evaluate mm-hmm. some tape and kind of circle the wagons, you get a Monday nighter, and then it's right back to the Chargers again on a short week.
And potentially a very hard-hitting Monday night game, although obviously you won't have J.J. Watt out there for the Texans, but
there'll be some personal feelings in that one, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it should be noted, as much as Denver fans can't stand Brock Osweiler, and they've let us all know that, his teammates have actually told me they all love Brock, and they understand why he did what he did. But that doesn't mean they're not going to take a little extra pleasure in trying to knock him off his hill.
Yeah, it's not going to be where they're really trying to hurt the guy. It's nothing like that, but they're going to...
They want him to feel it on
they
Monday.
They want bragging rights. They want bragging rights in this, that, you know, the defense is going to go up head-to-head against Osweiler, and they want to show him, hey, that, you know, you left here thinking you were going to a better situation. Well, no, that's not the case. That's what I think. If you're Von Miller and Derek Wolfe and the rest of those guys on that front seven, that's what you want.
Yeah, Brock said a lot of the right things, and I think I talked to a number of his teammates, defensive teammates too, that said, "Hey, man, he got offered more money. We'd all take it.
Everyone,
that's the business of the NFL."
Exactly.
But to your point, when you float out there, this team gives me the best chance. That's one of those things that lingers in guys' head when they line up across from me. We'll have to talk about it next week on the podcast, but I. Honestly, would Denver really have been any better off had he signed here? And I don't know that I would say the answer is yes for a lot of reasons.
I don't think the record's any better.
4-2. Look, here's the thing about it. I know Bronco fans are, when they're listening to this, are probably in a depression right now. If you'd have told me they were 4-2 after 6 weeks, I wouldn't have been surprised by that record.
That's the thing. I actually said going into the season, I had an 11-5 record, and I said 4-2 and 4-5-1, one of those two marks, if they're right there, they're going to be fine and they're going to be in the hunt and on track to be in the playoffs. And then, you know, you take your chances as they come. I mean, the playoffs are basically random.
Yep.
It's a one and done.
Who's hot
thing.
And who's healthy.
Yeah. And that being hot and being healthy going into January, assuming you qualify for the playoffs, is more important, I think, than having everything just right now. I think there is the opportunity here from these two games for a learning experience. Obviously, Gary Kubiak's going to come back in the building on Monday. Can't imagine what watching Thursday night's game for him was like. I mean...
I hope he's not watched it yet. But I have a feeling he has.
I think it was a Klein Kubiak who tweeted about...
Pops on the couch.
With Pops on the couch. It's not right. But I imagine that when he comes back in on Monday, because, you know, we all know Kubiak's is a gentleman to all of us, and he's a good guy, but he knows how to get after his team, and I think he will have some things to say about the effort and about the performance the last two games. And I think a fire is going to be lit, not only with the Osweiler thing, but I really wouldn't want to be Houston facing this team a week from Monday. I think their best game is coming out of this misery of this week.
I don't disagree with you, and it's funny now because as much as we all thought it'd be a storyline and in the media, it will be in this building. I don't think they're gonna care one lick about Osweiler. I think to your point, they want to get back to playing what they define as Bronco football.
And it's interesting how they had a couple of two-game losing streaks last year.
Yeah,
went on runs after. Wouldn't surprise me if after this skid they go on a 4-6 game run again. And if they do that, they're going to be in fine shape.
There's peaks and valleys to every season. Now, we're not telling you it's going to turn out the way that it did last year. We really don't know. A couple more injuries, and if something goes on with Okun where he's not playing come Monday night, that could be concerning.
And that's a big concern. Yeah, we didn't really touch on that before, but I'm glad you mentioned him because, I mean, he did have a costly penalty on the CJ touchdown, but he's been the guy that's been lighting the fire.
He's been worth the contract.
Yes, he has. Not just in terms of how he's played, he's been worth it in terms of his leadership in that room, and they need that more than ever. So, you know, he's going to be in the post-concussion protocol. Now, it helps that you've got 10 full days to rest before going into the Houston game. Certainly there's a chance that he can be ready for the Texans if he passes all the tests. But if they have to go into that game without him, you're going to be shuffling. It may be Michael Schofield at left tackle, maybe moving Donald Stevenson over to the left side. But then you're back at square one with this offensive line again. And, once more, we're talking about a unit that's trying to get cohesion, trying to find its footing. It feels like we had this discussion last year, back in that spot. And the sooner Okung is back, the better, because without him, it's going to hinder the progress of that unit coming together. And they need the O-line to come together. Otherwise, the season's not going to work out as they want. And that'll be it for the Broncos podcast, an abbreviated edition for here in week six as the building is clearing out for the bye weekend, and I think we all want to get going and chill for a little bit. It's been a hectic week, so thanks, Andy, for coming in, and we'll talk to you next week right here on the Broncos podcast.